Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Lane Flack, a poker player of considerable skills and success, having won 6 World Series of Poker bracelets, among many other caches. Lane Flack, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
You are known as a lot of fun at the poker table, frequently saying things that make everybody laugh. Is this a deliberate strategy, or is this just Lane being Lane?
Well, at first, you know, it's not intentional for sure, but I get very bored easily, and I guess it just occupies the time. I'm very quick-witted. And I never cut below the skin. I don't try to hurt anybody's feelings or anything. But, you know, I'll defend the weak, you know. I'll pick on the ones that are picking on others, and, you know, I defend the dealers. But, and then it turned into where the strategy is good, because you learn a lot about people the more they talk, obviously. So it's turned out good.
So if you get them talking, you pick things up about them?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you get somebody talking, you know, I used to feel 15, 20, 30 seconds, I can figure somebody out. I mean, just if I know what they do for a living, I know if they're capable of stealing pots, or if they're, you know, protect their money, or, you know, what they do.
But you don't think you're giving up that information to them by your constant chatter?
I go so many directions, I couldn't even figure out if I was trying to put something out there. But I know, like, when I'm very quiet at the table, I don't do as well. So it's a better strategy for me, but maybe not for everybody.
Okay. Fast Eddie Felsen is a fictional character played by Paul Newman in the movies Hustler and The Color of Money. It is said that the real person upon whom Fast Eddie was based was one of your mentors. Can you tell us about this?
Well, mentor, I don't know about mentor. One of my best friends noticed back in the days when I was going pretty hard, that I was a little bit lost, you know, fantasy and reality. All this was very confusing to me at some point in time. So he introduced me to this guy who is like basically one-on-one Harvard of the human emotion. And so he started helping me. I probably went to him for an hour to 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 3 years, 2.5 years, and then another year because I wanted to learn how to teach it. It was so intriguing to me. But the human emotion is so powerful. You know, you just learn everything you need to know about everybody and about yourself. And at one point, I said to him, I said, Jesus, sure feels like you're trying to brainwash me. He says, no kidding, kid. Don't you think you need it? So he was one person that every day I went in to see him, I respected everything he said and was teaching so much that I never not came out of there feeling like a better person.
But now, was he a pool player, or was he a psychologist, or?
Honestly, he was basically an overt covert specialist for Ron L. Hubbard, pre Scientology. So I'm certainly not a Scientologist, but pre then, so there is, you know, overt covert teaching of human emotion, and what all that started with is how to sell more tickets to movies, basically. So. For example, if, you know, a bunch of people go to a John Wayne movie and they just see John Wayne or whoever killing a bunch of people, whatever, and you walk out with the man and his wife, and you say to the man, how'd you like the movie? And he says, oh, you know, it was great. He did it. And he asks the wife, it's boring. It's just a bunch of guys shooting each other. So you add a woman to it, a little bit of a love story, and mix it up and add a woman. Now you're selling twice as many tickets. So you're basically learning about way people feel, think, or whatever to boost Hollywood sales. It was kind of, that's how it began.
Huh. Now, do you play pool? Are you a pool player?
Yeah, I played pool. I mean, not to the level of some of these poker players these days. My brother's a real good pool player. I played a lot when I was a kid, but I never stuck with it.
Hmm. And how did you get into poker?
I've always been a card player. I played, you know, cribbage with my father. I played a lot of cribbage, pitch, spades, pinochle. Poker, you know, everything. And I was going to college at the University of South Dakota. And at that same time, when I went back, my parents had a ranch in Sturgis, South Dakota. And Deadwood, South Dakota was opening up gaming. So I decided I'd go down there and you know, hey, let's get our jobs for the summer. And I just, I really had a knack for it, I guess. I started, you know, within 3 months of working, I was acquiring names like Boy Genius, Diamond in the Rough, and it just worked for me. You know, I didn't know I had a knack for it.
So did you decide I should head out to Vegas?
No. interesting story. So I had my daughter, and I was running my own card rooms at this time in Montana. I came home one day, and my house is cleaned out. My daughter's gone. My girlfriend's gone, with a note that said, work is more important to you than your family. I was like, well, okay. So I kind of just shut the game down. I was dating somebody else. We went to Vegas for the Hall of Fame, and I won it. You know, no idea that I, you know.
This would have been in 97 or 90.
97, August of 97.
Hall of Fame tournament.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame with the Binions, if you remember. And so, and I won it. By January, I moved here.
Wow.
And I actually went broke between August of 97 and January 1st, right across the street at the Rio. They used to have a carnival poker tournament, January 98. First one I entered, I won it. So I was right back on my feet.
Wow. So did you, when you, so you came here, you won that tournament. Did you immediately start playing really high and sitting down in the biggest games?
I literally jumped into a 300-600 Omaha high-low game, which is, I feel, my best game. And it was Dave the Devilfish, Johnny Chan, and Sam Grizzle. I beat him out about 30 or 40,000. And I said, I thought this would be a lot tougher than this. You
know? Well, it is. Yeah.
20 years later, I found out, you know, there are ups and downs.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong.
I literally had my girlfriend call me from the room and page me and say, you need me. So I had an excuse to leave the table because I didn't know proper etiquette on when to quit or not.
You're known for your card reading skills. On at least two different YouTube videos, I saw you with TJ Cloutier, and you told him, you have a look that you're holding a pair of jacks. And another time you told him, you probably are holding King Jack playing like that. And both times you were right on.
Yes.
And so I don't know if you did that too much to TJ, he wouldn't play with you anymore. Are you exceptionally good at this? Or is... obviously, you're not right 100% of the time, but...
No, here's how it works. I don't know for anybody out there who reads, there's a book out there called Blink. And Blink is a book about, for example, a guy buys this antique desk.
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, he buys this antique desk, and, you know, he has everybody look at it, and they all say it's real. And then one guy says it's fake, don't buy it, and he says, how do you know? He says, you know, it's basically sometimes you just know. I use that same theory in poker. You have left-minded thinkers and right-minded thinkers, and I think, like, what I do is with the left side, I do this process of elimination of what their hands could not be. You obviously don't have this hand, so you eliminate these hands. On this side, you do obviously a numerous size of educated guesses, and sometimes it just comes together where it just makes sense that that's what you should have.
Do you think that's something teachable?
The only advice I would have on it being teachable is when you play more aggressive, you learn more. If you're just checking and they're making plays or checking whatever, you learn a lot less. You learn a lot more engaging than you would not. I have a daughter that plays poker now. And I get a call from my mother. She says, you know, your sister said she's seen your daughter playing poker and she plays horrible. She plays every hand. She plays this. And I says, well, that's good. She says, how can that be good? I says, because she's going to learn early. That's not how you do it. But if you sat there and never played any hands and thought you were a poker player, how would you ever learn, or as I call it, have more clubs in your bag? You know, you're using and learning more tools than you would if you just sat there and watched. So, you know, you're learning how to lose.
So have you tried teaching her?
Yeah, but she's at that age where
they know everything?
Yes. And not only do they know everything, if you try to tell them, they have somebody to blame on when it doesn't work. So I'm trying to also teach her that you can't blame somebody else when they're wrong. Like, you know, don't ask.
Yeah, and you're only dad, and she's been listening to you for years and years and learning to turn you off.
Oh, yeah. And listen, there's nobody there's nobody smarter in the world than there is a woman playing a man. Like, they start the second they can talk with their fathers. They know how to work the fellow over.
Story on YouTube by Dutch Boyd about you being in a $25,000 tournament with Ted Lawson. And Ted wins a monster pot where Ted's aces knock out another guy's kings. The pot is very sizable, both in terms of money and the number of chips involved. The dealer seemingly was doing a piss-poor job of pushing the money over to Ted, so you decided to help out. Do you remember that? What happened?
I don't remember that. If I did it, listen, this is a $25,000 event, and there's a lot of dealers that are bad. Now, I'm notorious for defending dealers, and I'll give any dealer in the world, I don't care how bad they are, all the credit they need if you can see they're trying. But there's nothing, my pet peeve in the world is people who are just ignorant and stupid and will argue with you when you try to help them. You know, but if I see you're trying, you could, you know, you have the world from me. But I don't remember this.
Let me continue with it a little bit. See if I can jog the memory. So you got them all pushed over. And then just before the next hand started, you announced, you guys are so easy, and you had tossed Ted a $25,000 chip. You had palmed it, and nobody had caught you, and you weren't going to keep it, but you guys are so easy. And they were amazed that you would have done that. And then you freaked Ted out by saying, you know, the funny thing is that I palmed two $25,000 chips. Now, do you remember that at all now?
I actually don't remember that. I mean, that would be a pretty bold move because now, you know, you're under the microscope. I probably did. I don't know, but I don't recall it, no.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
Well, I'm sure, I think it's a good move to unsettle your opponents, right? Because it'd be the last thing they're expecting.
Well, it certainly wasn't my intentions. I probably was pushing it, and I couldn't imagine, but I do know stories get embellished as time passes, but I don't know.
They get improved.
Yeah. I mean, I used to tell people, listen, I tame my stories down so you believe them. I don't make them bigger.
Now, we're taping this right before the start of the World Series of Poker.
Yep.
Are you going to enter many events this year? And if so, which ones?
You know, I get asked that a lot. What I try to do is, see, if you go play a tournament at noon, you can't really tell. Because I'll play all events. There's not certain events that I go, listen, I'm not capable of playing that event. So if I start at noon and I make it through day two, well, I miss the 5 o'clock and I miss the noon tournament. So I don't know what my next tournament will be. If I get knocked out right away and I happen to like the 5 o'clock tournament, but I like the noon tournament better, I'll skip the five and come back in at noon. If somebody wants to golf, you know, I might just head to the golf course. I might need a break. I might need a better night's sleep. I might not feel that well. You know, I might.
But you might do 10 events over the summer or something, or more.
I'm probably more. I mean, honestly, the less you do, the better you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It means you're
Yeah, it means I made
winning.
A lot of day threes or late into day twos, and which it'd be great if I only played 10 events. If you played 30.
Are there certain events that you don't want to miss? I mean, like the main event, I assume, is when you're...
Right. There's a few events I really don't care to play. I don't have a big passion for limit hold'em events. I don't really have a passion for stud events. I like the eight or betters. I don't like stud high all that way.
Do you like the horse event?
I do like the horse events.
Even though that has at least two or three games in there that you don't like?
No. I didn't mean I didn't like them. I just mean, first of all, the limit hold'em and stud events generally are a smaller field of the true stud players. You know what I mean? It's not out of the 62 events, those would be the days I would enjoy taking my day off or break. I mean, if you know, in horse, I actually like playing stud. It's just, that's just the better ones I'd like to take my days off.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Especially if there's good action on the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, there is good action. And not only that.
Does the World Series bring in a lot of golf action?
It does, but once again, it's really hard to get people committed. Because say you're talking about at the table, they're like, well, yeah, if I get knocked out tonight, we'll do it. You know what I mean? But if you got to play till 3 in the morning, and you know, be back at 1, you can't expect somebody to get up at 8, 9 in the morning and come play.
Are there guys that you particularly like out on the golf course that... I mean, I know everybody plays, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so,
well, I mean, I in the poker industry, I play a lot with Mike Sexton. There's not a lot of other poker players I play with. We get Evan Sofer, which is a tournament player. You don't know him. I play a lot with him. You know, they go in spurts. You know, Negreanu is a member out of my course. I don't play much with him. He's always gone. Ivy came out for like 2 weeks and a bunch of them, you know, but the action wasn't big enough. So everybody's busy. You know what I mean? Like, I personally enjoy golf more than I do poker. So I live in Vegas, but I don't come down to the strip every day to grind with people grinding. You know, I'd rather go play private games somewhere than grind every day in the city to make a living. So poker is, I almost gave up on poker for a couple of years. And I literally started golfing so much. And when I walked back into the poker room, I swear to God, I didn't think anybody changed their clothes. And the conversation never broke stride. Like, they were talking about the exact same thing. I was like, whoa. Like, you know, reality check.
Gambling is a significant part of golf.
Sure.
Is that, is it the golf you like, or is it the gambling you like, or is it just the combination?
It's definitely, for me, it was the lifestyle. When you get trapped in a poker room and inside too long, you become this different person, which I didn't realize who people turn into. But if you can balance it with the healthiness or the lifestyle of outside and doing something more physical, the difference between poker and golf is when you work hard at golf, there's a reward, you know, because you can work hard at poker and still get unlucky. You know, so your reward is paid off for working hard at golf. But I do like the gambling. I do love the pressure. You know, I like having to make that shot for a lot of money. I love it.
Well, those of you with color radios probably noticed that Lane is fit, well-tanned, so he's probably been a lot of hours on the golf course recently.
I actually just played 27 holes before I came here.
As I was saying. okay. Now, it's for a while anyway, you live part of the time in Vegas and part of the time in Montana. Those are pretty different lifestyles, I would think.
No, I moved here in January of 98, and I've never lived back home.
Ah, okay.
I've lived here for the last 20 years.
All right. So, scratch that question. How is poker different in your perspective in 2017 from when you won your first tournament, big tournament for $67,000 20 years ago?
The growth obviously is enormous. The difference is, I think, the respect and the entitlement that this generation has. You know, they didn't have to go through the grinding of, you know, go find a game, put your name on the list, sit there and try to play for a day and a half. Now you just get online, run your money up, and come out here and think you're great. You know, and sometimes if they had to go through what we had to do to build our bankrolls or do what we did, they might act differently as opposed to I'm smart, you're dumb type mentality. Or, you know, the interaction we had with all poker players all the time when we seen their struggles or what they went through in life or the ups and downs, we saw everything. You have a different respect for the game and for the player than you do when, you know, a name on an internet or on a gaming site. So I wished that they understood or, you know, could have experienced what we did. Then I think the respect would be, there'd be more respect in the game.
But do you find them to be really strong players?
They are really strong players, but yes. But keep in mind, out of all the people that play online, we're only seeing the top 5% or whatever that weed them ways through to get to where we are here. Like, I don't play with all the guys that play the low limit ones, so I don't know how many of them there are. But we're only playing with the successful ones. Yeah. So of course they're good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a horrible online player. You know, I can't type fast enough to talk.
Yeah, can't see their face when you talk to them.
And then when they say something back, you know, you don't know if they're being condescending, funny, like, yeah, I can't tell their tone, so it just drives me nuts.
I would think you'd be the kind of guy with 12 different screens on 12 different games going.
I've been that guy.
That your mind is fast enough to do that,
That's certainly not in question. I am fast enough to do that. In fact, I'm probably better off doing that so I don't get too involved in one thing, but then it just becomes a numbers game.
Who have been the biggest influences in your poker career?
Well, single-handedly, Ted Forrest has been mine. You know, I started some of my backing and stuff with Johnny Chan, but the person that I was closest to and did almost everything with is Ted Forrest. And the man has so much talent, and trust me, he thinks so far outside the box that he's, you know, he's different. But if you take time to listen to him talk or what he says, it will make so much sense.
Was he here when you first got here? He was already here and playing at that time.
Yeah, right? He was here. He was here. I can't really remember how it went down that I got involved with him. I think there was a debt or something, and he says, no, I want it. I want to be a part of what Lane's doing. I haven't met the guy really, but I can tell that he's, you know, going to be great or successful, whatever. He took me under his wing, and you know, I started playing in the Larry Flint game, you know, which, you know, was an invite only. He got me into that. And I don't know, he had more belief in me than anybody. And so I think sometimes that's, I almost do better when people are staking me because I feel I don't want to let that person down. Letting me down is no big deal. You know, because I can live with me most of the time. But so he was, he's been good.
Without mentioning names, are there players to whom you mentor other than your daughter who doesn't want you for that?
Yes, there's some that I help. Now, as far as teaching or coaching people, it's not my thing. I've done well with it. I've gotten offered some pretty good positions to coach people, and I didn't know I had a knack for it. And I did something with a teaching seminar I don't even know who it was, World Series of Poker or something. And after one day, they offered me a piece of the company. They were so intrigued with this style that I was using, and it was very successful, and it was actually teaching people to read cards. And why people do what they do. Basically, it was the language of poker. It's poker, every move, every action, every raise, every fold, everything is basically a conversation going on without using words. So I taught the words, how to make them up in a sentence, and how to use it in a conversation to use a strategy. So it was very unique.
I'd like to take that course. Back-to-back flack. Now, other than being rather cool rhyme, what does that mean?
Well, in I think it was 99, I literally won at the Bicycle Club. I won, I think, I don't even know what the term, a limit hold'em tournament. The very next day, I won the stud tournament. The very next day, I think I took third in the no limit tournament. I almost went back to back to back. So I was at the final table at the World Series, and it might have been even, God, might have been Mike. It might have been Loudmouth Mike.
Mattisau?
Yeah. That's coined it back to back, but everybody, I used to drive a Cadillac, called me Cadillac Black, put it in your stack black, it all kind of rhymes, so it worked out nice. Well, then I went back to back no limit events at the World Series, so it really coined. And then the next year I went back to back days again, so it, you know, just kept going.
Wow, it sounds, yeah, the longer you keep it up.
Right? Now, let's try it this year, what the heck?
Why not? There was, back in that time period, there was something heard somewhere, something about Benny Binion, Crazy Horse 2, Mob, anything, any of those words ring a bell to you?
All right, I'll tell you guys a good story. And this, I probably have a lot of good stories, none at the top of my head, but so it was during the World Series 2002, and I get a call from Benny. He says, hey, come downstairs. I was staying at the Horseshoe. And we got in the car and we went down to the Crazy Horse 2 to meet some people in the back office.
That's a strip club, folks, if you don't know it.
Yeah, that's it. Closed down now. But I was in the back room, and I met with the Chicago Mafia. And I didn't know that's who I was going to meet. That's who we met. And he says, "Kid, we want you to come and play in the poker game, in Michael Jordan's poker game. We hear you're the best." I was, you know, I didn't care. Let's go. You know, whatever. You know, I didn't even think about this could be a bad idea. So I went. So the agreement was to go. And I went back to the World Series, and I'm playing. And I actually won back-to-back World Championships again. And David Letterman had a show where he did his top 10 sayings. And the question of this evening was, now that Michael Jordan no longer has the Wizards, what's he going to do? And number two on there was, I'm going to go win the World Series of Poker like Lane Flack. I get a call from these guys, and they're like, "Sorry, kid, cat's out of the bag. No pros." So looking back, I think I dodged a bullet. So literally.
You don't want to win too much in a mafia game.
Yeah. You don't want to lose too much.
That's also true.
Yeah. Yeah. They're putting him in the game to win, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you lose, all of a sudden they got you, you know, under their finger for life or something.
All right. We're talking to Lane Flack. We're taking a brief break to talk about our sponsors. We'll be right back.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Throughout June, there's a half-price gas and or food promotion. Earn $50 Chevron or $50 Smith gift cards for half price for points earned and redeemed in June. Usually 8,333 points is worth $25 in cash and free play. In June, it's worth a $50 gift card. Maximum 10 cards total per month in any sort of mix between Chevron and Smith. There are no double point days in June. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will begin in 2 months, on Wednesday, August 2nd at noon. The schedule is posted on bobdancer.com in case you're going to be in Vegas sometime between August 2nd and October 4th and think you might want to attend one of the classes. If you're at least 21 years of age, you're very welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Ultimate X. This is a 10-coin per line game where each time you at least get your money back, you earn multipliers for the next game. The strategy takes into consideration both the value of what you earn this hand and the size of the multiplier you're going to earn. At the South Point this summer, I'm going to be teaching the double-double bonus version of this game. The game returns more than 99.8%, and with the 0.3% slot club, gives you a small advantage 24/7.
Okay, we're talking to Lane Flack. What is Mega Fame?
So Mega Fame is a company that it's a Facebook platform, very similar to like what Candy Crush would be, where you buy coins or buy lives. On here, you know, you buy chips and you buy money. And it's a free money site. It's basically was developed, I think, by MGM. Don't quote me on that. But it was to teach the amateur players to learn how to play poker, to gamble. There's slot machines. There's everything in a full casino on there. And you buy all your money just like you would Candy Crush. You know, $4.99, you get a bunch of play chips, and you can play. And I met with these guys, and I told them I would take on the position as ambassador, and I would teach them to grow, to market it, and things to do, not to do, because they're very green. They're not in the poker world. They're accountants. And so I started talking to them about some things, and they were really interested in what I had to say. And so we came to an agreement and a deal, and, you know, they also own some real live platforms outside of the United States that hopefully in the future that's where we're going to grow it to. But right now, Mega Fame is just, you know, you can go to my Facebook page, and as soon as I put out the press release of ambassadorship and all this, you know, there'll be a lot of know-how how to get to the site. But basically, it's just Mega Fame on Facebook, and it's for the extreme amateur. And I'm doing stuff like celebrity shootouts, me and a bunch of other people. And, you know, we're going to start doing some giveaways that are much bigger and stuff like that. We haven't really went through the I don't know what all we're going to do yet. This is fairly new. We're just getting started. That site has been going for a while, but with what my intentions are, how I'm doing it, we haven't really put it into, what am I trying to say, put it into form yet. We haven't got going with that.
So still in the developmental stage. Yeah.
I figure we'll get started after the World Series, and I'll bring on other pros, so people can just log on and play. And the beauty of it is, you know who you're playing against, because it's you're signing up right through your Facebook page. So you know my Facebook page is real. You really know you're playing with me because I'm logged in right through my Facebook page. So everybody who would play through their Facebook page, you know exactly who they are. You can chat with them. You can talk. You can do whatever. So it's a real social media, growth. But I played the first tournament I did and I won it. Second time I played it. There's a couple of ladies like, you sure are aggressive. That's just, I'm sorry. It's kind of just the way I know how to play. Well, you don't really need the chips.
Yeah.
It's like, well, would you like me to not play? Well, I didn't say that. I'm like, you're making this very tough for me. Would you like me to play and lose? Well, that'd be nice.
Well, actually, being aggressive and learning how to read other players kind of go hand in hand, because you can get out of it if the cards aren't your way.
And that's kind of what I'm saying, but that's more, you got to be in the more novice stage to understand that. Amateur is, they're looking to just pick up the two aces or the big hand, and then they still just call. Like, they don't know. They're just there to pass the time, not to win. They're more there just to not lose, not really trying to win. If they did, they're great players.
So we have a mutual friend who is your biggest fan in terms of insisting that he thinks you should be in the Hall of Fame. And how do you feel about that? What do you think of the Hall of Fame?
Well, listen, the Hall of Fame, there's definitely a lot of people deserving. Maybe they should change it to where they let more than two in per year. I don't know. Because, it's always been two people every year get in. But 30 years ago, you're letting in two people. I don't know. Maybe they were only letting in one then. But the growth of poker is so big now, and we got all the European countries. All these people deserve. There's a lot of people who have done a lot for poker in Europe, and they're not getting in. So you got to be basically nominated by, peers or whatever. But, listen, I was give or take a decade. I was top of the world at poker. But so what deservingly entitles you to be in the Hall of Fame? I mean, the qualifications, I certainly have them, but I don't know if it's popularity, who decides to pick you or nominate you or whatever. But I mean, I'm sure eventually it's going to happen. I mean, I would like to see it, but I'm not over worried about it. But I'd like to see it before I'm dead.
Yeah, it's easier to see it before you're dead than after you're dead.
Yeah, for sure. But, it's obviously, it'd be a great honor to be in it. And, I don't know, I guess maybe some more accomplishments to see what happens this year.
That's right. Go back to back again.
The other thing is, here's what's going to happen in my mind. You have to be at the age of 40. So this younger generation, as soon as they start hitting 40, there's going to be a whole new list of people that are going to be deserving. So I would like to think sooner the better, because then there's going to be a whole group of people that everybody's going to be nominating and voted for. So
in big tournaments, do you prefer owning all of yourself or having backers?
I don't really know how to tournaments are a drain. They're very, there's a lot of money that goes out of the tournament industry. A lot of money leaves, the poker community. And
into the hands of the WSOP
or the casinos or whatever, which, listen, I'm not against it. I play tournaments. If I really wanted to grind at poker every day and play money, it wouldn't be tournaments. But, the notoriety in tournaments there for a long time had a lot of value. So, and the World Series still brings that notoriety. A lot of people still believe that's how you gauge who the best players are. So, I don't. I've played, the biggest cash games, and I know who great players are, and some of these players don't even play tournaments. So, you would really have to be in the whole mix to know who's really good. But the World Series is by far, the greatest thing that there is for poker. But I'm dodging your question. I don't care if I own all myself in the big event, in the biggest events. You know, the 10K main event, of course, you'd like to own all yourself because that one has more value than any other tournament in the world. But as if you go play a $25,000 event and, you know, and I'm playing for half, I don't really care. It's just like a $12,000 500 tournament. You know, still big.
Well, you mentioned that you feel like you play better when it's somebody else's money because...
Well, I feel I wouldn't let... It's easier to let... If I make a mistake, it's on me. I can live with that, but I'm probably more apt to try harder to do well for other people.
Sure.
I don't know. I've just always wanted to work harder for somebody else.
Working harder may or may not be the right way to get better results in poker. It's, I would think, sometimes being loose is...
Well, that's true. I mean, hey, listen, if you're being backed by somebody who's got tons of money and, you know, you can... You're right. Let's say you're being backed by somebody who's very wealthy. You could definitely go deeper. Like, I don't want to lose $1 million a year in tournaments and to try to make that score for $1.3 million. You know, but there's a wealthier person, you could get buried that number and make it up. They're cool with it. So you could definitely play a lot looser. You don't have to. I think when people play tighter, they're just trying to make it to that cash. They're trying to just, you know, get their money back and then hope to do well. And then the other people that can play aggressive all the way through, yeah, they get knocked out, let's go to another tournament, get knocked out, go to another tournament. So, yeah, you're torn on what strategy you should use. I mean, I play probably a little more defensive when I'm playing with my money.
Do you ever, if somebody asks you to back them, do you ever do that?
I've done it. I've done it. I mean, anymore, it's different. People are trading pieces, you know, amongst themselves and stuff, which, you know, is fine. Listen, I don't know. I'm okay with whatever.
Easy lane.
Laid back flat. Yeah.
Cigar smoking. At many places, it's illegal to smoke cigars at the poker table. And yet, for some reason, sometimes you've been able to get away with that.
Really?
That's what I hear on the internet. Is that not true?
That's not true. I don't think... Jesus, you can barely get away with smoking cigars where you're allowed to.
Okay.
You know, people complain a lot about cigar smoke. I don't think I've ever smoked at a place you weren't allowed to smoke. And I don't, you know, I smoke on the golf course because if you light up a cigar, it's an hour thing. It takes a long time to smoke a cigar.
All right. In poker, some of the best players have written books on how to beat them.
Yeah,
it's kind of unique in the poker world. Do you plan to write a book on how to beat you?
I've been asked to write books. I've done a few chapters, like in Helmuth's book, the top 20 greatest players that ever lived. We wrote our own chapters, and I think it's very unique. Me and ESPN had a falling out early because, like, at the World Series, I was at the feature table. Then when we were moving the feature table, they moved all players and left me there and brought me 8 more players. And with my microphone on, I make a comment that says, Jesus. Like, I mean, I was just getting to read these people. Now I got to stay here. You know, they're not paying me. And then they says, well, screw it. You're not going to be there anymore. And I'm like, oops.
Yeah.
You know, not really thinking it through before I said it, so I kind of made up with them all that. But when on TV, it's the only sport I know, if you want to call poker a sport, where we teach people how to beat us. Like, you know, if you can name something else where they teach people how to beat you at your own game. You know, I mean, when people sit down to play with me, they've seen me on TV or seen so many things that I've done that they know so much about me and I don't know them at all. So, you know, how does that favor you? I mean, it helps with the growth of poker, but how does that favor you? It seems backwards.
Negative EV. So, yeah. Given that you feel that way, Rich and I are grateful that you took the time to be on this radio show, because clearly this is costing you $20,000 for giving so much stuff away.
Yeah, over the course.
So, very good. We're close to being able to let you go. Are there any favorite stories you have that we haven't gotten to yet?
I mean, not off the top of my head. I mean, there's...
Okay, good. We'll cut that last question. Thank you, Lane Flack. It's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
Thanks, guys.